Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Radio Z Hour, an interactive talk show celebrating the written word. Presented by the Zahme Publishing Press, www.zahme.com. That's ZHARMAE.com.
Hello, hello, everybody. My name is Alicia, as most of you probably already know, and I will be your host today. Would you like to hear the specials? Today's specials are interviews. I will be joined shortly by our Zahme CEO, the bigwig, the man at the top of the tree of Zahme, one of the most awesome people I've ever met, Travis Grundy. And we will be talking all about doing interviews. Now, once you become an author, or once you are an author, doing interviews just kind of becomes a part of your everyday marketing plan. You do interviews on blogs, interviews on bookish radio shows. Heck, I conduct interviews every single week. Several, actually, every single week here on Radio Z. And I also do interviews as an author on other bookish radio shows and blogs, etc. And it's just kind of one of those things that you do, and one of those things that, you know, there's several steps you need to take in preparation. Many of our authors come on here and are really concerned about, really nervous about doing an interview. But I think one of the things you always have to remember when doing an interview is just be yourself, relax, but also be self-aware, and there's, you know, a bunch of things you should do too. But it really is quite hard to mess it up because, you know, authors are awesome, kind of awesome people. Now, as always, I must press the issue of the Facebook page. If you haven't already, please take a moment and click that like button. We are getting so far up there. We're so close to 500. And you, your like would mean the world to me and to us, all of us at Zahme. Every single Zahme employee would feel some level of appreciation if you would click the like button. That's facebook.com/TZPPRadioZ, or you can just type in Radio Z in the search box, and it should come up. It's Radio Z dash the written word, because that's the name of the show that you're listening to. Also, if you haven't, I know I say this every week, but it's really important. You have to go over to firstreadsfirst.com, reads with a Z, you know, because we love Zs, and check out some samples of some of the most awesomest books ever published in the world. And, you know, you can add them to your ever-growing TBR list on Goodreads. And in light of today's topic, I wanted to invite listeners to call in and share with us some interview stories. Have you ever been interviewed on TV, radio, print? And has anything awesome and or horrifying ever happened? Please call us and tell us your awesome and or horrifying interview stories. The number is 347-996-3900. Once again, that's 347-996-3900. And Travis is here to save me from my rambling. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. So it's just us today to talk all about interviewing.
I know. I'm a little bit sad because we had some people, and unfortunately one of our authors was out, and the other one, turns out, there's this funny thing that happens in the United States with time zones, and we're having our show while she's having dinner with the twin boys, so that wasn't going to happen. Apparently, you know, they went out. So we're okay with that, though.
Well, I'm kind of bummed too, because I think that Emma Jansen and Amar, they're like my two, and you know, don't tell anyone else this, but they're kind of my two favorite people to have on the show. And you are also
really?
One of my favorite people to have on the show. And so it was going to be, it was like this brilliant cocktail of people that I was going to just explode with awesomeness. I was really excited.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, Emma actually so she was really like distraught. And she says to me, she says, Travis, oh my God, I am totally going to miss like the best interview opportunity ever on Radio Z. Cause I know everybody's going to want to listen to the show. And, you know, that's her strategy. She basically, when we put up the list for the themes for the whole year, said, okay, well, I'm just going to sign up for everything that's going to be really amazing and probably get a lot of hits. And so she was crying to me on the phone. She's like, oh, my God, Travis, I'm going to miss this show. And so she sent me an email earlier today, and she's like, all right, so since I'm not going to be on the show, and she might call in at the very end. We don't know. We'll see. She's like, so I'm not going to be on the show. I want you to, like, tell everybody about my thoughts on this. And so I've got some notes from her as well that we'll discuss in a little bit more from an author's perspective on some things. You know, honestly, I didn't really think about, partly because I'm not usually, you know, promoting a book directly as an interviewee. But I think that the information that she kind of provided is actually really, really good. And so I'm certain that most people will probably be taking notes as they're listening in.
So do you want to kind of get us started?
Yeah. So today really is a little bit of a how-to guide. And I'm going to assume that in this discussion that, you know, most people have some idea of how to do an interview. We've all, you know, maybe gone to college and done, you know, admissions interviews, and we've, you know, all gone to job interviews every once in a while. And for the most part, unless it's, you know, the first time and you're working at McDonald's, you've probably gone through an interview, and it's been anywhere from, you know, one-on-one to those, you know, dreaded panels where you're, you know, kind of coming up and there's like, you know, nine people and they've all been working in this field for 30 years. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm trembling in my feet. Or you were in the military, like I was, and that's just a whole other game of crazy, because those guys really are kind of scary. So I'm assuming that, you know, most people have kind of gone through something in their lives and have an idea of kind of how that process works. And in a lot of respects, you know, going for a job interview or a college admissions interview, it's very similar to, you know, getting ready, getting prepped. That you would do an interview with the media with. But there's some things that we want to consider, you know, being artists, being authors, that are a little bit different. And whenever you go into any kind of interview, it's really, really, you know, important that you do research. Just like you research your company that you want to work for, you want to research the media outlet that you're going to go interview for. If it's a broadcast station, if it's a radio show or a podcast, if it's a little daily, weekly at a local college, you want to do a little bit of research, kind of understand who they are, understand what they've done recently, what they've done, because it kind of helps to bring things home. If you're a little bit more of a heavy hitter and you're going on broadcast interviews with, you know, Diane Sawyer, you want to know kind of how she's going to act. But where I like to tell everybody to start is, again, and I know I hype this all the time, but it's understanding your brand. And from the point of view of understanding who's going to listen into that interview, who's going to read that interview, what you're likely to say if you're an erotica author or you are a suspense author is going to be very different than what you might be willing to say if, say, you're a children's author. Children's authors in particular have some extra considerations to kind of be aware of. Most adult-oriented authors don't have to worry about kind of meeting the needs of two audiences. But really quickly, when you're understanding your audience, you want to understand, and hopefully you're interviewing places where they're going to find you. and where they're going to be able to connect with you, and it's going to be a positive experience. And you want to be clear that what they're looking for is going to meet their needs. So you don't want to say anything that's going to be offensive to that particular audience, particularly your core audience. With children's authors or young adult authors, I would always advise against anything political. Just out of hand, you don't want to get into any situation where you might say something and a parent or a teacher or a librarian might hear it and feel uncomfortable with, you know, a child that they may be affiliated with reading your work. That's not to say that, you know, work that's meant for children isn't, you know, fairly complex, but parents like to know that what their kids are consuming is being done in a safe environment. So I would always caution anybody who deals in children or young adult work to be very cautious in a couple of areas. Politics is one area that I would advise in most cases to avoid. You can do it, but you know, unless you know that your core audience is really strong and is going to follow you anywhere, you know, making any kind of political ideas known can be kind of disastrous, especially if you're starting out. And I assume it's going to be a given, but you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll are probably areas you want to avoid as well. If you're a children's author. For most everybody else, though, that's not so much of an issue. And in some cases, that might be where your audience is, and that's why you want to go. Especially if you're a personality more than your books are, per se. For example, Emma Jansen, you know, the reality is for her, you know, people tend to honestly follow her and her personality more than they do her books. And her books are just an extension of her. So oftentimes it's really a consideration, for example, if I'm, you know, coaching her on where to go, how to, you know, do things, that she's really clear that wherever she's doing the interview is going to meet the needs of her audience, that they're people who are going to want to read her work. So she is going to target places that are a bit more edgy. She is going to target places that deal with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Probably not politics so much, but definitely sex, drugs, and rock and roll because it's a huge part of what she writes about. So kind of leaving it at that, I would want to be clear that you want to know who your audience is and know that what you're giving them in an interview is going to be well received. And if they're not going to be reading that, that interview, they're not going to be able to engage with that, and you still want to do the interview, use it as a training exercise. But be hesitant. It wouldn't be my first choice. Sound bites are also another thing to be considerate of. A lot of the interviews you do, especially in media, dealing with broadcast, even with radio, get kind of boiled down to sound bites. And sound bites are short phrases that convey the entire message that you're trying to get across. If you're not careful, the sound bite that does get across, you know, to the interviewer may not be what you want. And so sound bites usually short, you're talking 5 to 7 words, and it's kind of like an elevator pitch. It gets exactly across what you want. And you want to make sure that you understand really clearly what you want to get across so that it sounds natural and so that it is something that is going to be catchy and that they're going to latch on to. That's a positive side when you're presenting that information. The negative side is when you get into an interview and you get a little bit more comfortable with an interviewer and you start answering a question that you may not have prepared for or that kind of throws you off a little bit. And you'll say something that is just, you know, it's just what you think. You're not even thinking about it in all honesty. And that's the soundbite that they latch onto. And that may not be positive. You know, it may be something along the lines of, you know, I hated Toys for Tots because it didn't do, you know, the right things, and I prefer to go with this other organization. And what that soundbite ends up turning into is author and so-and-so hates Toys for Tots.
Right? Everything can be taken out of context.
Yeah. So I would want to be really clear.
A media nightmare.
Yeah. And so, you know, with things like that, you want to be aware that, you know, especially in radio or broadcast interviews, things can be taken out of context, but they're going to be taken out of context for the benefit of that media outlet. The easiest way to avoid that is try not to say negatives about any organization. Try not to say things that are going to be taken out of context, and use active listening, meaning that be present for that interview. Don't zone out. You know, if you're in a situation where you can take notes, take notes. Listen to the questions. Sometimes if you're dealing with a bit more of an involved interview, you know, they're going to ask you a multi-layered question that you're like, what was the actual question? You know, so if you're in a situation where you can, take notes and kind of be clear on what exactly it is that they're asking. Oftentimes, if you prepared well, people are only going to ask you a handful of the same questions. They might phrase it a little bit differently, or they might add in, you know, an additional 2-3 questions just to kind of throw you off. But really what you're looking for is, what is the core question, and then answer that question. Along with sound bites goes the idea of not answering. Don't ever not answer a question. You know, even if you kind of push it off and say, you know, I'm really not comfortable answering that question, that's okay. But if you can answer the question, you know, it's always easier to answer a question or have some type of prepared statement that kind of, again, is a little bit of a soundbite, that sounds kind of good, than nothing at all. And if you're in a situation that, you know, maybe more of a media nightmare kind of an idea, hopefully you have a PR rep with you who's likely to answer for you. But don't not answer a question. That ends up, you know, creating too much hassle in most cases.
So I wanted to add, earlier we were comparing, you know, like a job interview or a college interview to, you know, a radio or a TV interview. And I just wanted to point out that there is a very big difference between the two. And that is that in this kind of interview that we're talking about, you're not trying to prove anything to anyone. And I think that making sure that you're not in that mentality that you're trying to prove yourself or you're trying to impress somebody is really good. You need to be confident. You need to know that, you know, you've already done it. You've already written the book. These people want to interview because you've already done something amazing and something you should be proud of. And I think that a lot of the times when I first started doing, I've only done a few actual radio interviews as an author, but my first couple times I questioned myself a lot. I felt very job interviewy, like I had to explain my book, and I had to explain why I did it, and I had to make excuses for it and myself, and I was trying to prove something, and it was weird when I realized, oh, wait, that's not what this is about. This is about, you know, this is about presenting my already awesome self to the world.
Yeah, and I think that's the key difference that you have to remember is that, you know, in a job interview or a school interview, you really are trying to prove something. You're explaining to that person why they need to move forward with you. When you're in an interview with media, I mean, you're not proving anything. They already think that you're amazing, or they think that you're crazy, or whatever they want to think. But the reality of it is that, you know, they've made the decision to interview you because they feel like you have a story that needs to be told. So it is important to keep in mind that, you know, you don't have anything to prove. It's okay to take a breath. Mm-hmm. It's okay to remember that, you know, you're just talking about, you know, this really great book that you've written, or this really great piece of art that you've written, and you're just telling the world why it's amazing and why you're amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're answering, you know, honestly, you're asking questions about how you came to the decision to write this and who you're writing for and, you know, why you do what you do. You know, it's an opportunity for you to be excited and happy It's an opportunity for you to not be stressed out about it in most cases. And it is. It's just an opportunity to basically, you know, use somebody else's platform to make more friends.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to point out that being self-aware is so, so important. Because you always see people, like, on TV, you'll watch an interview and someone will, like, suck their teeth or scratch things out of their nose or something. And you're just like, did they just do that on live television in front of millions and millions of people? So being self-aware is definitely really important so you don't end up accidentally picking your nose in front of those people. Or so you don't, you know, and it relates to what you were talking about being aware of how you answer things, how you word things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do this thing where I kind of half laugh at the end of a sentence, and it makes me sound really conceited. So I have to, like, really, really try not to do it, which then, of course, half the time I end up laughing way too much to compensate for it. But
yeah.
It is something that I have to be very aware of.
You know,
there, I'm trying
and,
to do
and
it.
That, nope. No, that's true. And it does lead into, you know, what I said before of being in the conversation, being there, and using active listening skills, and assuming that at that moment, everybody is watching you. And it goes into kind of physical prep or getting ready for the interview. And I'm probably going to, you know, offend a lot of people with this, but it's a reality. I'm going to go with it. Because it's how I believe, and the truth is that, you know, anybody I've coached and gone through with this has never had a bad experience. So I will tell you, when you're getting ready for an interview, and especially if it's your first interview or if it's a really big interview, say if it's your first, you know, live interview on a broadcast, you know, network or something like that, you're going to be so nervous. You're going to be nervous, trembling. I mean, there's just no way. You're going to be excited. You're going to be scared. You're going to be like, oh, my gosh, what did I get myself into? You're going to think, oh, my God, can I back out? It's like, you know, the five phases of guilt and anger and everything all wrapped into one. And the best thing I tell you is take a deep breath. It's going to be okay. You probably aren't, you know, being told about this crazy interview, you know, last second. So you're going to have a little bit of time to prepare. You're going to have a lot of time to stress out about it. Best thing I can tell you, the night before, have food. Eat food. Be happy. You know, get your comfort food on. If you drink, have a glass of wine or three, you know, and totally relax. Get yourself some sleep if you can. If you can't, you probably were going to thank me for those three glasses of wine because you will sleep after that. You know, and as far as set scheduling, never, ever schedule an interview early in the morning if you can help it. The worst thing you can do is have an early morning schedule and then miss your wake-up time, miss the appointment. It's not a good picture and, you know, ends up being a bad situation. So if you can avoid it, do. Schedule your interviews middle of the day, in the afternoon, in the evening. If you have to do a morning interview, depending on how early it is, it may actually be to your advantage to not sleep. That's a really good opportunity if it's being pre-recorded early in the morning at, say, 4 in the morning or 6 in the morning. That's a really good option because the reality of it is most people can kind of go and do an all-nighter and then pass out about 9, 10 o'clock in the morning and, you know, recover. But, you know, if you have an 8 o'clock, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, interview, you want to be up a couple hours before that. And here's why. When you get up for your interview, whether you're doing a radio interview, whether you're doing a broadcast interview, whatever you're going to be doing, you want to get ready. You want to get dressed. You want to brush your teeth. You want to brush your hair. You want to take a shower. You want to do anything you can do to be at your best.
Even radio interviews, you want to get rid of your morning voice. I have morning voice for like 2 hours every morning, and I just sound like an old frog that's dying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't go away for until
absolutely.
About 3 cups of coffee. So.
Absolutely. For guys, I'm going to tell you to shave. Unless you're an actor and you make $20 million a year, please shave. It looks horrible, and it's the worst type of presentation you can get. You want to remember that for the most part, people that are reading are going to be women, or they're going to be slightly more conservative guys that are a little bit older. So shave. If you deal with children's work, there should be no facial hair, period. You want to be unimposing. Unless you're really old. If you're 70 years old, you can have a beard. If you're not, shave, period. Shave, shave, shave. Put on lip balm in the morning. Make sure you have a large glass of water. Best types of breakfast, honestly, are going to be kind of staples. And honestly, they're going to be oatmeal with raisins and cinnamon. Cinnamon is super important. If you don't have the cinnamon, go buy a thing in Big Red and chew that. Chew a couple sticks of that before you go on. And the reason for that is that it actually keeps you more alert. Cinnamon is proven to kind of make you alert, make you slightly smarter for a short period of time. And as a side, if you take a test, you know, chew Big Red and have cinnamon in the morning. It'll improve your scores. But with an interview, it makes you more alert. It helps you, you know, stay focused a bit easier. Do not have a 5-hour energy in the morning. Have a cup of coffee and not more than one or two. You don't want to get jitters or have a crash right before your interview because then you can't recover from that. But if you're a guy, shave, brush your teeth, you know, do your hair, put something in your hair. If you're going into a studio for a broadcast interview, you want to make sure you have a clean face because they are going to put makeup on you so you don't appear green. And you don't want to have any kind of, you know, long-term negative issues, especially if you're a guy, because most guys don't wear makeup. If you don't wear makeup ever or a lot, and you do, it can actually affect your skin. So you want to kind of go in there with clean pores and all that good stuff. If you're a woman, again, you need to take a shower. I would suggest making yourself as happy and, you know, wholesome as you possibly can. So that may require you to shave your legs. It may require you to go and do lotion in the morning. Please make sure that you blow dry your hair. It's going to sound like an odd thing, but, you know, a lot of times women will kind of get dressed in the morning and they'll kind of go to the office and kind of let their hair dry throughout the day, which is cool. When you go into an interview, you want to look like you've been put together. If you're going into a broadcast interview, again, I'm going to say the same thing that I say with guys, you don't necessarily need to put makeup on. If you do, that's fantastic. They're still going to touch up when you get there. So full makeup, maybe not what you want to do, but I would probably suggest some type of foundation that you're comfortable with and that you know is going to be cool for your skin. The worst thing you can have is have them do your makeup and have them use a product that you're not used to using and having a bad rash or a bad reaction afterwards. But with hair, you know, put it up, dry it, put it up, put it down, something. If you're going to have it put it down, make sure you straighten it or curl it so that it looks decent. You don't want to have the idea of being or having your hair look slightly grungy. If you can, I would suggest coloring your hair before an interview. Having roots with a lighter shade doesn't, you know, or a darker shade doesn't look so awesome when it's coming across on screen. So if you can, color your hair ahead of time or put it up so that the roots may not be entirely visible.
I'm also going to say on this point, I had a teacher in college who always stressed that you never want to have your hair falling in your face. You need to be presentable and open. And if you have your hair in your face, you seem reserved and closed off. So if you have bangs, you should trim your bangs so that they're not in your eyes. And, you know, have your fringe over to the side, maybe clip your hair back. And an updo is always preferred over your hair being down just because it makes you more open and presentable and approachable.
And if you have your hair down, I always suggest curling it if your hair is straight or straightening it. Straightening it can be kind of bad, especially if your hair can be kind of wiry or wild. Curling it is kind of good because can kind of hold And, you know, of course, you can use mountains of hairspray. That's always fantastic. But, you know, being flammable in front of a whole bunch of hot lights isn't always the best. So, you know, curl it if you want or pull it back. A ponytail is always a good area. A French braid is always good. You usually can't go wrong with that. When you get dressed, you don't want to go completely uber professional necessarily. You want to be approachable, but you do want to be, call it Friday casual or business casual, or depending on how the situation is, you know, even really casual if you're going for a particular look or an image. If you're going away from Friday casual or business casual, I would be very clear that you're doing so because of your brand, not for any other reason. Mm-hmm. It's always safe to put on a pantsuit and a dress or a suit and tie. You can never go wrong with that, especially if you're going to be, you know, on television. If you're doing anything else, business casual, honestly, is fine. And for guys, I mean, a button-down shirt is fine. You don't even need a jacket unless you want to. If you're doing a Skype or a Hangout, oftentimes you're going to be doing that at your home. So make sure that you turn lights on. Make sure that what people are looking at behind you is not a mess. Do it from your office.
It's really,
you know,
important.
Make sure it's not a mess. Oh, yeah.
No underwear on the floor behind you.
And when you're thinking about, you know, what people are going to look at, they're going to be looking at you from, you know, chest up. So, honestly, a button-down or a blouse is probably the simplest thing you can do. What you're wearing below that, you can wear your pajamas. Nobody's going to know. But you want to appear semi-professional and like you're, you know, with it. And for a lot of authors, it's usually comfortable.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out for the getting dressed segment, since we're kind of moving away from that, that you should always wear something newer as opposed to something older, because it's really easy to not notice how faded your black shirt has become, or how, you know, things will look old without you really noticing it until you see yourself in a picture of you wearing that shirt. So it's always better to wear something newer and make sure that you pay attention to the quality, because clothes are, you know, have a high turnover rate. They wear and tear pretty quickly without you really noticing it. And even just slightly faded black shirt can look really cheap all of a sudden, even if it was $50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, for that reason, lighter color. Yeah, and for that reason, lighter color in clothing is actually not a bad idea. Blues, whites, that's fine. You know, you can even get some funky colors if you'd like. But it's always a great opportunity to go shopping. So, you know, use that as you please. The big thing I would say about you know, the getting dressed and ready part is take a shower, dry your hair. If you're a guy, put gel in your hair and do something with your hair, or comb it back or whatever is most flattering to you. And if you're a girl, make sure you wash your hair, make sure you blow dry it before you go anywhere. If you're prepping for a home interview, like a Skype or a Hangout interview, for guys, for the most part, make sure you have lighting going on and that you're in a decent shirt, that you don't look like you just woke up from whatever. You know, so wash your face. Women, you know, do a little bit of light makeup. Honestly, I promise it'll come across better. Even if it's a little bit of lip gloss and some eyeshadow, you'd be okay. When you're preparing to actually do, you know, an interview from your house, and for most authors, this is where they're going to be doing a lot of their interviews. They're either going to be on the phone, or they're going to be at a coffee shop with somebody, or they're going to be, you know, doing a Skype or a Hangout. Because a lot of authors also do a lot of, you know, like in-classroom Hangouts. It's really, really important that you prepare where you are. Very specifically, I said this again, you know, turn on all of your lights. One of the worst things you can do is have you know, bad lighting or bad shadows. And if you've ever been like on a Skype or a Hangout and you've seen the other person, or you've been on FaceTime and lighting is kind of up and down, it's kind of difficult to see things or see people, whatever. You know, if you have a home office, that's a great place to do it. Make sure what is behind you is moderately cleaned up. It doesn't look crazy and disorganized. And it looks like, you know, yeah, it's kind of used. That's okay. But it's not a mess. A mess kind of provides the idea of disorganization, which provides the idea of unprofessionalism. And so we want to remember that, that a key factor during your interview is that you're making more friends and you're telling more people about you and why they want to be around you. People want to be around people that are organized, that are clean, that have this good friendly disposition, and any kind of disorganization behind you is going to detract from that.
I also wanted to add that when you're doing anything via your webcam, to always have your laptop or your camera up above your face, as opposed to your camera being in, like if your laptop is in your lap and you're looking down on it, that's a very unflattering angle.
Mm-hmm.
So if
Absolutely.
You have a low desk or anything and you're using your webcam, put your laptop up on a stack of books or something so that, and then bend it so that it's looking down on you so that you're looking up into it, and even just slightly will be much more flattering. We actually do have a caller.
Oh, yeah.
Yay. Hello, caller.
Oh, hello. This is Emma Jansen.
Yay, you made it.
Hi. Hi. I don't know if you guys mentioned this or not, because I only had a few minutes to be able to listen with the boys and everything. But you guys were talking about television, what to wear, what not to wear, that kind of thing. And I had two things that I had to make sure it was said, because I've done television before, not for Emma Jansen, but for other stuff. And never wear red. That's a terrible color. And unless it's brand spanking new, it doesn't translate well on a TV. And then if somebody has an older TV, you just look terrible in red. So don't do that. And stripes. There's something called, like, I think it's like a moiré effect or something like that, where if you wear stripes and then you move, depending on how big they are, it looks like your stripes are waving like a flag. It looks like they're actually moving.
I didn't know that.
So it's an optical illusion. So I would say just don't wear the stinking stripes and you're safe. But yeah, it's an optical illusion. If the stripes are small enough, and then if somebody has a bad TV, forget it. Now it looks like your shirt's waving and they're not focusing on you. They're paying attention to your stinking shirt. So no red, no stripes.
Yeah, and people are really good about, you know, being, yeah, people are really good about being distracted easily. So that's a good thing to point out.
Yeah, if you've got an eyelash that you've glued on, this is for the ladies, if you've got an eyelash that's glued on and then it starts to fall off, forget about it. Everybody's looking at your eyelash. They're not listening to you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know. That's my two cents on the TV.
So, can you tell us a little bit about presetting tabbing? Because I know that you emailed me about that, but I think that you might be a better person to talk about that.
Well, I didn't preset for the show, so I'm not prepared.
Okay, fine.
Presetting, I talked about it in my little blurb that I wrote just briefly, and it's basically, you're prepping yourself with notes, you're prepping yourself with tabs from your book. That way, when we have a conversation, you know, on a podcast or on a radio show or something like that, where you're not seen, you can just reference your materials during the conversation very quickly, and you're not stumbling over, you know, some people will try to slip through their material or whatever it is, or they can't remember a quote that they wrote in their own book. That's embarrassing. So if you just have it in front of you, quickly run through it, you know where the tabs are and everything in your book, or you know what note card it's on, you just bust it out, read what's on it as it pertains to the conversation, and you sound very intelligent and professional.
shirt. Oh, yeah, that's the truth.
So that's really what it is. But that's for radio, that's for podcasts, that's for interviews what you're not seeing.
True. And that works out really well for the radio, the podcast, things like that, phone interviews. And you can even use that really good if you're doing a Hangout or Skype interview. But it doesn't translate well for broadcast. So I would be really clear that when you're going to the broadcast, do prep before. You know, really be prep before. And again, kind of mentally track what they're asking and get down to the direct question they're asking so that you can get right to it. Most times in my experience, though, at a broadcast interview, they're not going to ask you specifics necessarily about your book, but they're going to ask you overviews about the book. So I might say something if I'm an interviewer, and this is something you might experience actually in any interview. I might say, hey, I'm a Jansen. So glad to have you on the show. You know, why did you write Narcoleptic Hooker? It's so wild and so crazy and so scandalous. And the key there is, why did you write the book?
That seems like such a duh saying, but when you're nervous and you're sitting there or when you know you're listening to an interview and somebody asks you those questions, you know, you kind of forget. It's like when you're watching a game show and they ask a really easy question and you're like, what? That person doesn't know. Well, they're under pressure. They're not thinking clearly. They're not, you know.
Well, it's kind of like
yeah.
Even when the average Joe asks me what my books are about or what kind of books I write, half the time I open my mouth to say something, but it's just such a big question that nothing comes out. And half the time I say, I don't know. I think that for big questions like that, like why did you write a book, it can be a simple answer, but it could also be, you know, a series of events that drove you to this place in your life to where you just had to do it. And, you know, it's this big, big question. And it can really, I think that one thing you definitely should do is you should write down your answers for every question that could possibly be asked of you. Like, mm-hmm. That question can just be so daunting when you're put on – it's not even when you're put on the spot, because you know they're going to ask you the question, but you still – it's just such a big answer. It's hard to find the words a lot of the time.
And
Can I squeeze in here? Because the Darmay Publishing Press put out an email that requested 100 questions be answered by the authors. And as I was going through it, and it takes a long time, okay? I'm not even finished with mine. It was given to us months ago.
I will admit I'm a demon with that, so, but I love those. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I was doing it last night, and while I was going over it, there are a lot of questions in there that I'd never thought of to respond to. You know, I never thought somebody would ask me a bunch of questions about publishing. And so I know that that's an area that I need to work on. So if you're a member of Jarmay Publishing Press and you're an author, I would highly recommend you go back to that email and go through it because it will help you prep for an interview. Because it does. It asks a lot of questions that, you know, you're not prepared to answer. You know, okay, when did you start your writing career? How did you get into writing? Everybody asks that question. Most authors have an answer for that, but mm-hmm. When it got to the specifics on publishing, I got to say, I was dumbfounded. I didn't know how to respond.
Yeah, and, you know, it's always the questions you're not thinking people are going to ask, and they really are simple questions, but doing an exercise like that is really good because it does give you an opportunity to prep, and even if you're just writing the answers, you're still having to actually formulate an answer, and for most of us, if you do take a breath, even in the heat of things, you know, the answer will come to you, and you can say, oh, yeah, I already answered that question. This is kind of what I said. So this is the answer.
It's like training. 100 questions that Jarmay put out is like training for an interview. Train your brain, yo. Do the questions.
Oh, yeah. No, that's always a good one.
Good to have a good answer written down, because as an author, you get asked these questions by interviews, but you also get asked these, you know, a bunch of questions by everybody that you meet I mean, everybody that I meet that, you know, when I tell them I'm an author, they ask me at least 6 different questions about, you know, what are my books about, what do I write about, da, da, da. Like, you know, there's several different questions that I'm always asked, and then a lot of questions that I'm asked one time, and I'm like, I have no idea how to answer that. And it probably is good just for your career as an author to have these answers written down.
They always want your answer to be very profound. How did you feel when you wrote chapter 15 about such and such? I was trying to fit it in between going to the gym and feeding my kids. I don't know. That's the real answer, but they want you to say something profound so they can quote it and they can put it in a publication somewhere, or they can take a clip of that audio and blast that somewhere. It's important.
And I would say even an answer like that, you know, I fit it in, I don't have any feelings about it. I fit it in, you know, between going to the gym and taking care of the kids. You know, that kind of humanizes you. One of the things you forget is people, you know, authors are like actors, they're like artists, they're like singers, you're a celebrity, and you know, it's just not common. You think about it, it really is, but it's really not. It humanizes you, and it makes you just like anybody else. And people like to know that, you know, there's somebody you can chill with.
Well, humanizing yourself in an interview is all fine and dandy, but not everyone can do that. So I would suggest if you accidentally make a mistake and get a little too comfortable and talk about in between going to the gym and feeding the kids, you can caveat that with, well, ha, 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 laughter, laughter, but then blah, 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 something profound.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, that's kind of like a means of getting your thoughts across. That's always a good thing to do. If you're not sure what to answer, and I've said this, you know, I said this earlier in the segment, you know, if you can avoid it, don't say, I don't know. Don't not give an answer. Say something, even if it's, you know, not very special, get your thoughts together and then say, you know, but seriously, what I really, you know, how I really felt about this is this, and this is really what, you know, it means to me. And then kind of move forward with it. You know, if you make a mistake, it's okay. The best thing to do in terms of speaking is speak a little slower. Try and be very cognizant of filler. It's always a huge area. When you say when you stop and pause, it's very easy to let that happen. Or if you happen to, you know, be somebody who's like a California girl and you like to use the word like in every like other like word like, it detracts.
Or a clear your throat kind of guy.
Yeah. So the best thing to do really is to slow down a little bit, swallow whatever you think you have in your mouth, find your voice, and say, so. Here's the deal with my book, and this is why I'm so amazing and why you interviewed me to begin with. And then go forward with your interview. You're bound to make mistakes. You're bound to regret something you said. You're going to have that feeling of being done and saying, oh, my gosh, they asked me this question, and that's what I answered? And you're going to hit yourself in the head, and you're like, oh, my God, I can never, ever do an interview again. But it's okay. It's okay. There will be more interviews, there will be more opportunities to screw up. And really, it's a question of, did you learn from any mistakes that you made? And did you listen to the interview after the fact? It's really, really important, because we're kind of moving on to the kind of after interview, that you listen to the interview. You don't improve your speaking skills. You don't improve your answers to questions. You don't actually improve and get yourself into a position where you can actually get more interviews until you do them and you listen and you learn. After the interview, make sure that you send the interviewer a thank you email, a thank you phone call, something that says, hey, thank you so much for taking the time and barreling through with me. I know that I was probably not the best interview you've ever had, but I really enjoyed the experience. It was an amazing experience, and I look forward to doing it again with you very soon.
There was an interview that I did on a podcast out of Illinois. Am I allowed to say the name of the show?
Yeah, please.
Bill and Joe
I wouldn't
show.
Know why you wouldn't be.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Cross promotion? I don't know. And
I love it. We're happy. We love it. It's all good.
You know, he was a professional enough to call me ahead of time and have a conversation and say, hey, these are the things I'm going to talk about. Is there anything that you don't want me to ask you? It was really nice, but he did that on his own because he's a professional. A lot of people don't do that. So I don't think it would be a bad idea for the author to give somebody a call and say, hey, what are the things that we're going to be discussing, blah, blah, blah. Now, in this conversation, the pre-setting conversation that we had on the phone, we talked about PTSD. And that's a subject that is important to me. I suffer from PTSD, and I wanted to talk about it, but there's certain things and certain limitations. I wouldn't go there. So when he asked me the questions on the actual podcast, it was comfortable. He knew that I didn't want to take it any further than, you know, that type of question, and he left it alone. Left it alone. So we just had a good conversation prior to the interview, and it went wonderfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. If you can, it's always best to do something like that because it will give you an opportunity to get to know them a little bit better, for them to get you a little bit better, and to make sure that it is a good experience both ways.
I did one, my very first radio interview as an author was with this show called The Writer's Lounge a couple years ago, and he sent me like a list of all the questions that they could possibly ask me, and then I went ahead, it was just a Word document, I went ahead and wrote down my answers for all of them, and she only asked me about half of the questions, but it was nice to be prepared because there was a lot of questions. It wasn't very laid back. It was very like, you know, we're going to ask you 25 questions over the next 25 minutes kind of deal. So it was nice to have that.
Can I say that I just have in my back pocket that I will screw up several interviews in my lifetime? And knowing that and keeping that in my back pocket, hey, you know, what? I shrug my shoulders. What are you going to do? I'm going to mess something up. I'm going to scratch my nose accidentally on the TV. I'm going to say the wrong thing, and somebody's going to not buy my next book or whatever. I will screw something up. That makes me feel comfortable and more relaxed.
That's true. If you just embrace it, you probably actually will do better because most people mess up because they're so nervous about messing up. I mean, both people are so focused on it, so scared, that that's what actually causes them to mess up. So you might actually not mess one up with that mentality.
I don't think you're wrong. No, I listened to your interviews, actually. You usually do a pretty good job. And I know that you did, and I know a lot of the other authors have used Radio Z as kind of a safe place to have their first interviews in some cases, and then kind of going, you know, forward with more interviews. But it's okay to mess up. Like I said, it's okay to mess up as long as you make an effort to learn from messing up and then go forward and do it again and don't make the same mistake. Make a new mistake so we can correct that mistake.
You know, Travis, you said something about using filler words, and I'm going to bust you out here and say, you've been saying a lot.
I love it. That's
true.
I love it. I love it. It's my go-to filler word.
Of course, I have a last problem, a like problem, and an problem, and an problem. As we talk about this, I hear myself not being able to speak all of a sudden even worse.
You know, the really funny thing about that is that I have had a lot of experience public speaking, and the one thing that they will knock you down on if you're in an academic setting is filler words. It's completely possible to fail a class because you just did not know how to not have filler words. The best thing to do with that, if you feel like you're going to have it, is run through what you're going to say and do it a couple times because then you're not going to be looking for what to say next. And usually the reason why people have filler words is because they don't know what to say. They're still thinking about it. It's not quite there at the forefront of their mind. And kind of like in the military, we use muscle memory to reinforce training or to correct behavior. You can actually train your brain, train your mouth, train how you speak to avoid filler words. And part of that is going back even further to our discussion on sound bites, creating the conversation, creating what you're going to say, and saying it enough that it becomes natural so that when you do say things like whatever you're going to say, you don't actually infuse any kind of filler words. And so now you have me see me here, I'm like trying to like be cognizant of my filler words. And it's really easy to kind of be, you know, effective with that. Again, slow down, take a breath. It'll be okay. And
this is so entertaining.
Is it entertaining watching you like self correct?
You're just like I'm like as you're saying, don't say like I'm like
And yeah, Emma Jansen busted
you
can
out. Tell
what?
You're trying so hard.
Everybody told me
I said I'm way too much on the radio over a year ago when I started doing this. And I really tried to stop for a very long time, and then I just gave up and accepted it. It humanizes me, remember?
Yeah, right. Okay.
It de-celebritizes me. It brings me down to their level and allows me to have a better connection with my audience.
Well, you know what's really important about this is it just lets everybody know the fact that we don't pre-script this particular show.
You said there's some contradiction here because you did say, and I think Travis said, that we're celebrities. Because now this is recorded,
yes.
I'm going to go back and listen to it again after the show.
People view us as celebrities.
Human.
I'm not saying we view ourselves as celebrities. I mean, like you take pictures. You're actually the one that put me over the edge. Like when Travis pointed out a couple weeks ago in our marketing episode that you go and take pictures with people holding your book, that was when I realized that you were a celebrity, and then I realized that I'm a celebrity too because I actually went to dinner with some people via like a meetup group, some people I'd never met, and they were like floored by me. And so those two things made me realize that people perceive us as celebrities, and it's a good thing that we can bring ourselves down to their level by being us.
I think you want to be really clear that it's not.
People get glassy-eyed when they look at me.
I think that it's really important to be clear here, though. I don't know that it's necessarily bringing ourselves down to anybody's level, but it's helping other people realize that we're not above them. We're just like them.
No, it's about perception. It's not about. It's about perception. How they perceive us and how we really are.
Well, I must say, we're getting into a little bit of a debate here, and I'm kind of enjoying it. But when I was at the restaurant and I took some pictures with a group of guys, after I left, I friended the people on Facebook and talked with them. Oh, it's so great to meet you and this kind of thing. One of the guys said, the ladies at the next table wanted to take a picture of us because they thought we were a celebrity, like a boy band.
That's amazing.
That's perception.
That's fantastic.
And I was like, did you tell them that I was, it's me? I mean, I don't mean to say it like that, but
I'm the celebrity, not you.
But they did. They corrected them. They did. They corrected them, but I'm sneaky, you know. I try to do that in public where there's lots of people, you know, because then sometimes, where was I? I was driving from New York to, where do I live now? Illinois. And I met up with a band.
I'm very jealous. You moved to Chicago, and we're all crying. New York has missed you.
Oh, God. Thank you so much. But anywho.
band. I wanted to take a picture with this band because they were doing great things between New York and Canada and whatnot. So I took a picture with this band in my book. And the guy that took the picture, I said, listen, I'm an author. These guys are in a band. Could you take our picture? He did. Then he wanted his girlfriend to come over. And then some other guy came over. And it was like a whole thing. So for like a second there, yeah, sure, all right. I had my little 15 minutes of fame. It was great.
Ooh. But I think you also, for you, it's not just 15 minutes. I mean, you've been doing this for 5 years now. You were, I don't think that you realize, but you were actually the third author I signed to the company. And you've literally been with me from the very beginning. So this isn't exactly 15 minutes, so not so much as like 5 years.
Well, my book, though, didn't come out for, whatever, 2 years or however long it took. So nobody knew anything about anybody. And then Unashamed is that, oh, my God, that's so vulgar. She's writing erotica, you know, about herself. It's a timeline of people that she's been with. Not so much.
Well, I think that it's really exciting to know, though, that with books, especially, unlike, say, an album from a singer or a movie from a set of well-known actors, books have very, very long shelf lives. And it's not uncommon for people to get called up and say, hey, I read the book you wrote 10 years ago, and nobody knows about it, and it's really amazing, and I want to do an interview with you about it. And you're like, okay, sure.
Yeah. And that's another reason why I talked about prepping, because if you can go back and say, man, I don't remember 3, 4, 5, 6 books ago what I wrote in that first one. You know, I need to take a look through it again and write some notes. That's what I'm saying. We're on the same page.
Oh, yeah. No, researching is huge. And I like your idea of tabbing out the book, because I think you actually have your own private set of books, not the ones that you carry around with and you show off, but you have your own private set of books that you take notes on that are tabbed out, that you write all over the place, and people are like, I want that book. I want to know what she's actually thinking. But you're doing it after the fact, after you've written it. And sometimes when you go back through your book and you're like, wait, I wrote that? What the hell was I thinking? And that's what they ask about. You know, so when they do ask things like, oh, how'd you feel when you wrote chapter 15 of the book that you wrote 10 years ago? You're like, I have no idea what I was even thinking. I don't even remember what I wrote. And sometimes you go back to the book and you're like, oh, crap, I wrote that? That's what I wrote? And so you have this, like, reimagining this feeling about it, and you're like, oh, crap, now I have to explain how I was thinking 10 years ago. And if you're like me, I don't remember what I ate, you know, this morning for breakfast, let alone 10 years ago.
It was probably ice cream.
I'm that sweet. But I think it's really – I do like your idea of tabbing. It is a really good tool for authors to tab out. And even if you don't remember what you were thinking or feeling or even what the book was about, if it's been a while, it's a really good opportunity for you to recreate, in some cases, a viable answer to a question about part of your book. And if it's older, it can be going through it fresh, and you can, you know, be fresh and starry-eyed all over it again. And you're like, oh my God, I wrote this and I wrote this a while ago, and I've been looking at the cover for years and I haven't touched it in so long. And you can bring that fresh idea, that freshness back to the book. It's very possible, especially for people who have had work out for many years, to revitalize sales 5, 10 years down the road, especially if you're keeping it in publication in print with a publisher or, you know, via self-publishing. That revitalization is an opportunity for you to reach a new set of audiences, reach new people who may not have been exposed to it or may not have had the opportunity to be exposed to it. And the other thing to think about is that when you go back and revitalize an older book, when people go to look at that book, when they hear about it, it's not fresh. So they're not the first person. And you're thinking to yourself, that's maybe not the best thing, but it is. They already have people that have come before them that have taken the risk of reading your book, reading your work, and hopefully writing a review. And so when you're in the process of doing like a revitalization campaign, that's always a benefit because then people can say, oh, this is a good book. There's 51 other people who have already read it and reviewed it. There's, you know, 500 people that have already read it and reviewed it, and it's got a positive review. That's always a huge selling point. And I wanted to touch kind of on this after the interview idea. When you're, on a more practical sense, when you finish that interview and you sent off that letter to that interviewer saying, hey, thank you, make sure you connect with them. Connect with them on their social media accounts. Make sure that you promote them whenever you see something going on. It's just kind of keeping constant contact with them every so often. That will often keep you in front of them. And when you have another book coming out, you can go back to them and say, hey, did you like my new book? Oh, you haven't had a chance to read it. Take a look at it. Maybe you can get another interview off of it. Even if you can't, they'll be able and hopefully more willing to promote you. The whole idea of cross-promotion is actually very, very valuable. And you can use wherever that interview is posted, because most interviews really are posted online eventually. You can link out to that. If it's to YouTube or to a podcast, it ends up helping the people that have done the interview, and it gives you an ability to present a media section or an interview section on your website or links out on your Tumblr or your Twitter or your Facebook page, and it only helps you. It can never really hurt you. So the thing about that is, you know, make sure you add it on, link out to it, connect with those people, and keep in touch. That's really a huge thing. Keep in touch with people that you do interviews with. They like it. They like to know that you know, their effort wasn't a waste. And maybe you'll be able to do another interview with them again down the road.
I'm listening as if I'm just listening to the podcast. I'm like, wow, okay. And then
yeah,
I can
go on and on.
Yeah. In case anybody forgot, Mr. Travis and I have experience knowing each other prior to Jarme because we were both in the service together. So, and we deployed to Afghanistan together. So that's why we speak as casually to each other as we do.
Yes, that's definitely the truth.
That's why I know about the ice cream for breakfast.
Uh-huh. You know, it's actually a good thing that you and I are not usually on the show together because I can only imagine all of the things that you might dish out about me if you were so inclined.
No, just ice cream. But that humanizes you.
Now I feel like the humanizing thing is starting to become like an excuse for our behavior.
Maybe.
Well, okay, you're right. I do have a very professional side, and that side is presetting and it's research. That's the professional side, but that's the side that nobody sees. So when I go and I do an interview, I'm joking, I'm laughing, I'm throwing in snarky little whatever remarks. But I'm also answering the questions. I'm not saying a lot of ums. You know, I've got it. Sometimes I don't.
Emma, what would you say has been the most difficult thing for you in terms of being prepared for interviews? Where do you feel like you maybe have screwed up the most? And if you've changed that one thing, it would be the perfect interview.
Well, so far, I don't have the fame and glory that everyone assumes that I have, so I haven't done a whole lot of professional interviews. However, I think that I would continue doing presetting if possible. I could continue doing the research if possible. And the worst thing to me would be if I didn't get an opportunity to do those things, I might actually request the interview be pushed out or not do it at all, because I don't want to set myself up for failure.
Okay.
My biggest problem is always confidence. Like I said, I didn't realize I was a celebrity until, like, last week. And I think I always assumed, that I was, like, a newbie, like I was a lesser, my interviewer, that I was trying to prove something, and, yeah, probably showed a lot in most of the interviews I did, and I had to get over that. Now I have, but hopefully, we'll see. Next time I do an interview, if I suddenly feel like a child again.
For me, honestly, it's active listening. My mind goes in like 9 million directions all the time. And like I can't tell you how many times I wake up in the middle of the night and will have to start writing or doing things because my mind just won't calm down. And it's a really great thing because, you know, we create things out of nothing with it. But when you're in the middle of an interview and, you know, the interview is asking you, well, and oftentimes my interviews relate to, you know, the company, but they're like, so what drove you to become a publisher? And the simple answer is I loved books and I wanted to help people get their voice out. But it's a really bad thing when you kind of miss half the question because you're thinking, ooh, shiny. Ooh, ice cream. Ooh, could I make ice cream shiny? Or something along those lines. And so I cannot profess enough the need to be actively in a conversation because if you aren't, you really will miss things. And sometimes that core question that was being asked was right up front or right at the end, and you didn't hear everything, so you're not exactly sure, and you do become a little bit dazed. When you go to answer that question, you're like, okay, so this is kind of my answer. I think this is what you were asking me, but you're not really sure, and that can totally, especially if in the middle of an interview, deflate the confidence that you built up for yourself over that course of that interview. So
you should just pretend that your phone cut out. You should just be like, oh, you're breaking up. Can you repeat the question?
That's really good. That's a good one.
I have no idea what you just said because my creative author mind is too awesome to be here right now. Can you repeat the question?
That's a great way. That's a good save too.
Like, sorry, I was thinking of my next book. That's a good one.
Oh God, isn't that the truth? That is me right there. Oh my God.
Yeah, I like write in my mind all the time. I think of stories. I thought of a great. I get so deep into my mind that I'm like totally not aware of what's happening, which is really bad because it happens when I'm driving a lot. But I'll write songs and then I'll start singing the songs and I'll write books and I'll start making notes and I'll like pull over and pull out my Evernote on my phone and write down, this is another excellent book idea that I just had while I was driving and I couldn't see the road. I could only see the book.
That's happened to me. I've had the really bad experience of being on the phone while I'm driving, doing interviews, and I've done this more than a few times.
Don't admit that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to mention that. But not mentioning that, I end up, like, getting home and have no recollection of actually doing that. And it's mildly scary, I will admit, but I'm totally focused on the calls. So don't do interviews. The moral of that story is don't do interviews while you're driving because your body will go into autopilot and you would drive yourself home or, I don't know, to McDonald's if, you know, you happen to live in Beverly Hills. You'll drive yourself to McDonald's and you're like, oh, wow, I'm here. This is cool. And have no recollection of how you got there except that you had a really great conversation and there's just devastation in your wake. So don't drive while you're having interviews. Make sure to do research before you do an interview. Take time to breathe. Put yourself together. Your best foot forward. And know that you're going to make mistakes and that it's okay. And as long as you listen to your interview after the fact, learn from any mistakes that you did, if you felt like you could have answered a question better, work through that answer. Work through what you think is the best answer. And then once you've gotten to that, say it several times, like do it 20 times until it feels natural. And that's what we call muscle memory for speakers. And that's pretty much all I have. That's the end of it. I pretty much laid all of it on the table there.
Good, because it's bath time for my twins.
Yeah, perfect timing because we're also getting to the end of our show, so it all worked out.
Yay! I made it. Well, this was a fun
I'm glad
episode
you got
to
call
do,
in.
Actually.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you, as always.
Alicia, you're awesome. I'm glad to know a celebrity.
Hey, you were the one who made me realize it.
Right. Travis was going to say something in there, and then he stopped.
Yes, Travis has nothing to say. All right. We want to close this out, Alicia?
Yeah. Emma, do you want to, like, do an outro? You know, like, do you want to talk about your book or something?
Oh, my God. Oh my gosh. Can you tell us about Unashamed? Totally tell us about Unashamed. Yeah.
What?
Sorry.
Unashamed is a memoir of Emma Jansen and her wildest times from 2000 and something to 2000 and something. I don't even remember because I haven't prepped. It's a fascinating memoir, a little bit of vulgar, a little bit of sass, but a lot of love and heart.
Oh, she's being totally coy. I'll do it for her. Unashamed is like the best memoir you can ever read. It's this incredible coming of age story about, you know, a woman finding herself and coming to terms and being happy. And it is chock full of the craziest situations you will ever imagine. Ever.
You just can't go on.
And you have a new one, right?
Much.
That just came out?
Yes, I do have a new one. It's Discovering Sanity, and that one is a psychological drama piece.
And the cover is brilliant, right? The cover is just amazing.
Star
all your
Booth,
covers are amazing.
Hello, she's amazing. You know, a little
really
secret
like
before
cover,
we go
though,
on the cover. Star Foos actually liked or preferred another cover that she designed
really?
Over the one that was printed. And she
yeah.
let me say, no, I prefer this one because it relates better to the story than the other cover. So she bent and didn't break on the cover of Discovering Sanity.
Either
Does that
way,
make any sense? I have no idea.
No. It made sense to me, but I remember that conversation,
yep.
those emails, honestly.
Yeah.
And that was
yeah,
a difficult one to
it's
choose.
It's a fantastic
me.
Book. I have somebody reading it right now, and she can't put it down. So, yay. That's a compliment. She, you know, posted it to me on Facebook and let me know, hey, I'm not done reading it, but I can't put it down. So
that's always the best feeling in the world.
Isn't it?
That.
And I want to talk to her about all the details of it on Facebook, you know, and if she has any questions or if she has any complaints, I can just directly, you know, talk to her and say, well, this is why I did that and that. And what else do you want to know? I'm an open book. Wink, wink, you know.
What I want to know is when we're getting the next book from you. I'm super excited for the next one, in all honesty.
I am looking for heroes. I am looking for drag queens. I have posted it everywhere. I want to tell another hero story. I want to tell something that someone did that they, you know, or a friend, family, whatever. Something heroic, you know, whether it's, you know, pulling themselves out of alcoholism, saving somebody's life, whatever, freeing themselves from the, you know, tortures of you know, some sort of disorder or disease that they have said, okay, you know, this is what it is and this is where I have to be now. That's heroic. You've accepted it, you've embraced it, and you've tackled it in a different way, and I'd like to tell that story. But for some reason, nobody in the world has a hero that they can recommend to me. So I'm looking for heroes. I'm also looking for drag queens. I need a personality for narcolepsy.
Or a drag queen.
That's right. Or a heroic drag queen.
Ad? Contact Emma Jansen immediately.
I need you. Emma Jansen needs you. She wants to tell her story.
What's the best way for them to contact
Twitter
you?
Your Twitter or something. Yeah.
Yeah, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
EmmaJansen.com. And you can go to my contacts page, and there's 5, 6, 7, 8 different ways that you can contact me, whatever your preference is. And most likely, if you have a fantastic story, you're going to end up getting my phone number, too.
Uh-oh.
Hey. But I will, if somebody does contact me, I'll give them the details. There's going to be a lot of discretion, especially with the heroic stories, because some people don't want to be named. I want to make sure I protect the people that are involved. So.
Cool. Well, look forward to you telling me about your heroes. I'm very excited about that.
I like the idea of a heroic drag queen. I think you should go there.
I'm sure 100% that they are out there. They just need to tell me about it.
All right, guys. So we should probably wrap it up. We keep talking, and we're kind of going over.
Thank you so much
for being on. Yeah, sorry we didn't interview you until the very, very, very end. We're like, oh, right, you have a book.
Yeah, right?
Well, that's one of the things that I love about this show. It's very laid back. Too laid back a little, but...
Maybe.
It is a good, like you said, Travis, it's a good kind of a stepping stone to, like, real interviews.
Oh, yeah.
We're too laid back. That's like
we're
a kiss and a compliment, the same thing, you know?
I know, right? I know. No, honestly, it was a pleasure being able to speak with you guys again, as always. I am really looking forward to doing some more of these more training type of episodes here in the future. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm doing my whole, again, my go-to. Keep you guys in contact and look forward for new work coming out soon. If you want to get in touch with me directly, you guys can get me on Twitter at TRAVEO2343. And I will... add you on as a friend because I'm not friendly.
Thank you, guys. This has been fun.
All right. Bye.
Awesome.
Bye-bye.
All righty, folks. Well, yeah, that was today's most awesome episode with two of the most awesome people ever. And me, of course. yeah, check back with us next week, same time, same place, and I will talk to you all then.